We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I mean, like covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here. Y'all, I'm talking about Alabama. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, I got to tell you, too, if you hear those ads playing during the break, that is because Right Side Radio, we are a standalone entity unto ourselves. We are a business like any other. And one of the revenue streams that supports what we do every single day is advertising. So if you're listening to the show and you got to think about it, man, I'm a Right Side ruffian. I got a business. I sell goods and services. Well, guess what? We got a captive audience full of tens of thousands of Right Side ruffians who might rather buy from one of their own as opposed to somebody else. So here's the deal. You want to advertise on Right Side? You don't call the station. You contact us directly. You go to our website, rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. You click on it, the advertising and contact tab. Send us a message. Lauren from Right Side will be with you right away. She will jump on that like white on rice. So, yes, you want to advertise on Right Side, we'd love to have you on the team. Go to rightsideradio.org and just send us a message, and we will get back to you. All right, we're switching gears right now. I'm going to number two on the Triple Dipper, the Butcher of Iran. You know, I say a lot of times when I open every hour, you know, part of my little diatribe there is I say that we do the local, the state, the national, and sometimes the international. Yes, we do. Cover all of it. I think it's important for us every once in a while to get outside of ourselves, get outside of our moment, get outside of politics, and look at the world around us and make sure that we're well-versed. You know, there's scripture, I think it's in 1 Samuel, I think, 16, that David's mighty men. And the sons of Issachar were some of David's mighty men. It says they were men who were aware of their times and what Israel should do. That's a very prescient statement. They were aware of their times, meaning they were read up, man. They were paying attention, heads on a swivel. They knew what was going on in and around and amongst them. And we got to be the same way. It is one thing for us to go, Iran's bad. It's another thing for us to be able to take that topic and do the occasional deep dive and know who we're dealing with. So something happened in the last 48 hours that is extremely significant. The president of Iran, Raisi is his name. The president of Iran died in a helicopter crash. Very unexpected. I mean, the first thing you think of is, who shot him down? Did this happen? Did that? Here's a deep irony, by the way. It was a 20-year-old American-made helicopter. Go figure. But the president of Iran, along with several other members of his entourage, died in a helicopter crash unexpectedly. And this guy was not a good dude. He was absolutely one of the most heinous individuals to hold any office in the world. So Iran is a bad actor on the world stage. They are often what is referred to as a malign actor, meaning that they are someone who has a malignancy to them. They are someone who has the constant sort of presence of doing things on a global geopolitical scale that causes harm to others. Iran, by the way, is responsible for the death of how many Americans? I can't even begin to say. At some point, I saw a report that said that, I want to say it was like 680 Americans were known to have died in IED strikes in Iraq from a special kind of IED called an EFP, an explosive force projectile, that was developed by Iran, and then they trained subversives how to use it that could blast right through the armor and kill U.S. troops. So yeah, Iran's a bad actor. They're the ones who fund and foment and train the groups like the Houthis, who are shooting at our ships right now, Hezbollah firing rockets into northern Israel, and of course Hamas that we're watching get just obliterated by the Israelis in Gaza. Iran is absolutely one of the chief exporters of terror in the world. That doesn't happen unless they have some really bad actors serving in their senior leadership. Now, there's going to be problems on the street of Iran, but you would be surprised to know that also there's a great deal of civil unrest in Iran right now. Iranian people are about fed up with the regime, but it's an oppressive regime. It's a tyrannical regime. The things you see them doing to people on the world stage, Sometimes they do even worse to their own people. So Raisi dies. Who was this guy? And I thought, you know what? Here's a perfect opportunity to give my audience just a real taste of who it is we're dealing with. When you hear us talking about Iran is supporting the Houthis or Iran supporting Hezbollah, is Iran just that kind of that big, you know, giant thug in the background just standing in the shadows? No, they're more than that. They're an evil presence on the world stage. So listen, let's break down who this guy was. So first of all, you need to know that not only is he the president, or was he the president of Iran, that prior to that, he had been one of the chief executioners of Iran. He led whole pogroms. He literally was responsible for mass genocidal effort. You didn't know this. It's hard to get details, but we do know that upwards of 30,000 people were executed for not being considered Islamic enough. Iranian president, according to hotair.com, Iranian president was actually honored with a moment of silence to mourn his passing at the United Nations. I'll get into that more in a minute. And it goes on to say, perhaps the EU, said one EU, European official expressed his solidarity with Iran, says perhaps then the EU could hold a ceremonial stoning of a woman or the execution of a rape victim in honor of his passing, or hang a few gays or beat women who have revealed their hair too much, because that's the kind of guy he was. That's the kind of things he led people in. That's the kind of things he required. That's the kind of things he actually supervised. The article goes on to say this. If there's any ambiguity about the evil nature of this man who's been leading the jihad against the women of Iran, let me quote from a profile that was done on him back in 2021. Raisi was one of four members of what was known as the Death Committee, responsible for the 1988 execution of thousands of Iranian prisoners in just a few months' time. So no, it was not like he was a judge and he called for the execution over a 30-year career. Within a few months, they executed upwards of 30,000 people. It got to the point that it was a machine. It says Raisi was one of four members. It was called a cleansing of religious infidels. It was a massacre, the article says. Raisi would typically spend only a few minutes with each prisoner, some of which were young children. No, these were not adult men hauled in away from their jobs and families. This was young women. This was children. And this was the occasional man. He typically would find that they refused to feign loyalty to his regime, even after prolonged and brutal torture, which in some cases was personally directed and overseen by him personally. It is estimated that as many as 30,000 were killed by hangings or firing squads. The speed and efficiency of the killings, it says, with hangings using forklifts every half hour and the dumping of bodies in piles on trucks, even traumatized the executioners themselves. It gets worse. I know that if you have kids listening, you might be able to be aware. I'm about to say some things that are hard. Even virgins, it says, were systematically raped before they were executed in order to get around the Islamic prohibitions about killing virgins and to prevent the women then from being able to reach heaven. That's who we're talking about. When you wonder why Iran supports groups like the Houthis and Hezbollah and Hamas, look at who their leadership is. This guy was known as the Butcher of Iran for good reason. UN held this moment of silence. This is where you think, okay, this is where we make a statement, right? This is the United States is not going to stand there in solidarity with, nope, but we did. UN Ambassador Robert Wood stood for the moment of silence to honor Raisi. Israeli Ambassador Gilad Erdan called the moment of silence of the mass murdering Raisi a disgrace. Erdan slammed the UN Security Council for doing nothing to advance the release of remaining hostages who have been in Hamas captivity while doing what they did to bow their heads for a man who massacred, he says, and murdered thousands in Iran, in Israel, and around the globe. And then he went on to say this. He said, what's next? Will they dedicate a moment of silence to commemorate Hitler? State Department spokesman Matt Miller said, well, it was appropriate to do so. We've been very clear that Raisi was a brutal participant. Yeah, okay, whatever. The bottom line is this. We're talking about Iran, a nation that keeps the world destabilized. This is their president. Now, it gets deeper, and I got some great sound clips that we'll come back to after the break here in a minute. But listen, a senior advisor to the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. told Fox News, yeah, it's a diplomatic norm to stand for moments of silence. I'm saying, no, that's a great place for the world to see Israel being supported by America, and America saying, we're going to step out of the room for a few minutes. You guys have that moment of silence if you want to. Or for that matter, just stay in your seat and don't agree to stand and honor the person who killed U.S. troops, who slaughtered his own people. I mean, for the love of God, this is actually really obnoxiously bad. All right, Big Rig, take me to a break right now. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. We'll dive more into this topic. Who was the butcher of Iran? How does it impact us? What do we do next? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. And you could put that on a T-shirt, which we did. All right. So let's jump right back in. I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper, the butcher of Iran. I tell you what, Big Rig, I'm going to call for those sound clips here in just 1 minute. So Congressman Michael Waltz, a former Green Beret, now serving in Congress from the state of Florida, made some comments regarding this. They called him in apparently right after the crash to give some color commentary on where he thought things were going and why we should or should not be concerned and what we should do next as a country. So I'm going to play his comments for you momentarily, but I will tell you this. The leadership of Iran is in two layers. You have the true governmental, we elected them leaders. Well, elected them is a bit of a misnomer because the elections are always considered to be very rigged. But at the same time, you've got the religious leadership, which is overarching over everything. So the supreme leader is what he's known to. The supreme leader is the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, all right? So Ayatollah Ali Khamenei is the big boss. Nothing happens without his say-so. Well, there have been a number of other presidents over time. You might remember Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and others, but they don't always jibe well with the Ayatollah. Not the guy who just died. Raisi was seen as being one of the likely successors. Like he might have even been elevated up to supreme leader one day to be the religious king, to be the ultimate power in Iran. Can you imagine a violent man? Can you imagine a guy with that kind of genocidal streak in him? The kind who presides over systematic rapes and hangings, even of children? 30,000 people in a few months, the Great Purge, and he was one of four men on the death committee, and then he was next in line to be potentially the supreme leader of all Iran. Well, you wonder how this is going to go. What's the U.S. going to say or do? By the way, you might want to know this. Under the Trump administration, Raisi himself was sanctioned by the U.S. in 2019. Treasury Department accused him of participating in decades of human rights violations, according to Forbes. 2019, we actually put him on a sanctions list. Pretty sure he's not on that anymore. Well, he's off of it now because he's dead. But anyway, I'm pretty sure that was one of those things that went away with the Biden administration. But let's bring up that comment. You got those clips in order. I had two of them, right? Let's bring up that first clip. It's a little long. I might stop you in midstream, but we'll just go ahead. And this is Congressman Michael Waltz on an interview with Fox News. Go ahead.
Well, first, I just want to say good riddance to Raisi. No one should be shedding a tear for the butcher of Tehran that was responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of dissidents as a prosecutor, and then, of course, shooting schoolgirls in the street, literally, in the Mahsa Amini protest, the girl who was murdered by state police for not wearing a hijab. So good riddance to Raisi. I don't think it'll make that much of a difference. The president is more like a chief operating officer. It's the Ayatollah that really matters. The thing to watch, though, is the secession plan for the Ayatollah. If we're going to see drastic changes in Iran, if we're going to see internal stability, the Ayatollah is quite elderly, could die at any minute. Raisi was seen as a key part in helping with the transition to the Ayatollah's son. So that's what we're keeping an eye on. But in terms of just replacing the president and major shifts in Iranian policy, I don't see major changes. To answer your question, Dana, the thing the administration should be doing is making the regime
work. Hold on a second. Let me jump in there real quick. He's about to say what he believes America should be doing, but let's talk about what he just said. First of all, if you notice, he said good riddance. I mean, we're talking about a guy who is about to be president of a rogue nation that is trying to gain nuclear weapons. Think about it. A guy who would massacre children and hang women for not wearing their hijabs, who massacres 30,000 people, presides over it himself, even presides over some of their tortures. This guy who runs tribunals in his own country also is the president of the country then that helps foment all the discord in the Middle East that we keep having to send troops over to deal with. The reason why Gaza is what it is right now, filled up with the fighting over Hamas, is because of where's Hamas get its funding from? Iran. This guy has been presiding over the death and destruction of people worldwide, to include his own country, and he was close to getting nuclear weapons. So let's paint that image. Keep it going.
Worry about its own internal stability. The thing the regime cares the most, more than destroying Israel, more than supporting terrorism, is its own internal survival. And the thing it needs to do that is cash. So we should be enforcing the sanctions, going back to maximum pressure, making the Ayatollah's inner circle wonder, maybe there's some infighting there, wonder how secession's going to go. And the more Iran has to look internally, the more it's scared about its own stability, then the less time, effort, and energy it has to attack Israel and support terrorism and destabilize the world.
Okay. That was the end of that clip, I believe, wasn't it? Okay. Go ahead and cue up the next clip. I'll have it in a minute, probably after the break. But the bottom line is this. What he is saying, and I agree, what he is saying here is what the United States needs to be doing is looking for, first of all, two pieces. When you deal with things on a geopolitical scale, there's the acronym DIME, all right, D-I-M-E. The acronym DIME stands for diplomacy, information or intelligence, depending on who you're asking, military and economic. These are the four ways in which a country can project its power or its influence. They should be right now doing things that bring economic sanctions to bear that keeps that country of Iran in a, and right now when the head's been lopped off the snake, they should be looking at sanctions that help keep them in a position of being unable then to focus on things outside their borders. And he says we should also be, and I agree with this, we should also be in our intelligence community, there's the I, we should also be looking at means by which we can help those who are trying to rise up from the inside. Civil unrest right now in Iran is exactly what is needed because in his words, he said one of the things the Ayatollahs fear more than anything is the people on their own streets. We're in a position right now where if we had an administration in office here in the United States, if we had something besides the Biden administration, I would believe that those things were going to happen, but they're not. They're not right now. You're talking about the Biden administration who most recently gave billions of dollars to Iran. Why? I don't know. Because they could, I guess. Maybe they've got some appeasement notion that things are going to get better. But I'm going to tell you right now, no, there's a whole lot of reasons why we should be weighing in hot and heavy right now on the economic sanctions and the intelligence aspects. More to come on this. Phil Williams, Whiteside Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Whiteside Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Whiteside Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Welcome to hour number three. We're in Dipper number two, talking about the butcher of Iran, the president of Iran, Raisi, who just died in a helicopter crash. Real quick, take a couple of text messages. Steve from Huntsville says, Colonel Ben Shapiro said it best in his statement about this. He said, quote, "Tragically, the president of Iran died in a helicopter crash, and I feel bad for the helicopter." So I pray America gets real leadership in the coming years, and I'm waiting for Biden to lower the American flags. Yeah, that's Steve from Huntsville. Steve, thanks, man. Josh from Hayden just checked in and said, Phil, don't be wishing that on me, Josh, but thank you very much. And then he says, In your opinion, what's the most, this is a little off topic, but I see what he's asking for. In your opinion, what's the most elite special forces team in the U.S. military? Hard call, man. It depends on capabilities. I mean, if you want somebody to fly helicopters, you're looking at the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. So that's a whole different category. If you want somebody to do a waterborne insertion, you're probably looking at, they call them the DEVGRU or SEAL Team 6. And then you've got all kinds of units under JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command, some of which you don't even know about. In fact, there's some, well, I'll just leave it there. But there's, of course, everybody knows about Delta, Operational Detachment Delta. But there's some amazing special operations capabilities in our U.S. military. And those are some of the elite tier ones I just talked about. Let's see here. Bob from Madison says, about Iran, had President Carter not been in office during the Iran Revolution and the hostage crisis, it may have turned out different. Now this office and previously Obama are no better. I was at an intercept site during the entire ordeal. Tragic, very sad how it progressed. Many guys had tears, especially when the helos and C-130s collided. Bob, thank you for that. And I'm interested to hear that you were part of the Operation Eagle Claw on the ground. That's an amazing mission. We had Jerry Boykin on this show at least twice, I think. I've had a chance to sit with him and just get to know him a tad, and I won't try to profess to, be on like some kind of running buddy status with him. But General Boykin was a member of the plank holders of Delta, and he was on that mission, and he said the same. Anyway, Bob from Madison, I'd love to know more about your background and what you do and what you did, but thank you for your service, and you are correct, sir. Let's jump back into the topic here. I've got one more segment from Congressman Michael Waltz. Big Rig, you got that segment here, that second one? Let's try this. So Congressman Michael Waltz went on to discuss a little bit more about the situation with Iran, and then I'm going to jump back into some resources I've got here. Why this is important? It's important because we have to recognize that what we're dealing with is not just a thug nation that helps fund terrorists. It's bigger than that. Well, they're in the background. I mean, they're just plausible deniability, but I think they funded Hezbollah. It's way more than that. We're talking about a nation that is foul. We're talking about a nation that is evil. If you go back through history, you will find the Persians, which is what the Iranians descend from, they don't consider themselves Arabs. They consider themselves Persians. And so the Persian Empire, if you recall, are the ones who marched across. Let's take a quick history lesson. I'm gonna run a rabbit trail here. You ready? Everybody's probably seen the movie 300. Let me recommend a book to you that is on the Right Side website recommended reading list. It's an amazing book. It's fiction, but it's historical fiction. And it is called Gates of Fire. In fact, I'm looking at my recommended reading list. It better be on there. What? Hang on a second. Why is it not on there? Here it is. It is Gates of Fire by Stephen Pressfield. If you've not read Gates of Fire, I highly recommend it because 300 was a very Hollywoodized version of a true story. When 300 Spartans, along with some Athenians, went and stood in a small place called the Hot Gates near Thermopylae. Okay, why are you telling me this, Phil? I'm getting to it. You like when I talk to myself? Big Rig's laughing at me. It's sometimes I talk to myself and I say to myself, self, because that's what I talk to myself about when I say to myself, I said, self. Here's the thing. The Persian army was the largest known army at the time in the world. It's said that they brought 1 million soldiers across what's known as the Hellespont. They even may have built a bridge of ships. And they marched across the Hellespont, a narrow pass that took them across into what we now know as modern Greece. Greece back in those days was not even a nation. It was a grouping of city-states, Athens, Sparta. They were all separate and independent. Sometimes they fought with each other. They were like little mini-kingdoms. But when the Persians came, the Spartans and the Athenians decided, we got to stop this, because they're going to run over us. They're going to destroy everything we have. And they would have. And so they stood in a place called the Hot Gates. had cliffs on one side, a very narrow pass, and had a cliffs going down to the water on the other side. It was basically, it was the only way the Persian army could march. And 300 men could block it easily. And they did for days. For days on end, this very small grouping fought the Persian army. And it went, there was a couple of great quotes that came, that we know it to be true in history. King Leonidas was the one who led the grouping. He had Dionysus, which is one of his captains who was there with him. And there's a couple of great quotes that are believed to be attributed to the actual battle, because there was one survivor who was sent back because King Leonidas wanted someone to tell their story. There is one when Dionysus is talking to a Persian emissary who says, "You should surrender. You should surrender now, because our archers are so vast that their arrows will block out the sun." And his response was, "That is good. Then we will fight in the shade today." That's a man. And the other one was when they called upon King Leonidas to throw down your weapons. And he said, "You come and take them." Here's why I'm telling that story. Those were the Persians under Xerxes. The Persians, it is widely believed that the 300, even though they finally died in that battle, the Spartans, that they galvanized the heart and soul of Greece. And all the nation states rose up together and banded together and went and defeated the Persians thereafter. Had they not stood in the hot gates and fought, it is widely believed that what became known as the origins of democracy and the modern world, the Western world, would never have happened. The Persians would have controlled what we call Greece, which is where we saw much of the modern Western world birth out of. Can you imagine what would have happened if 300 guys hadn't stood in the hot gates? I say all that to say the Persians still want it. They never got rid of their passion for it. The Persians still want the free world. They do not like the idea that they are confined to their own borders. They will fund and foment trouble wherever they can, and they will take a caliphate when they can get it. And if it takes nuclear weapons, this is the nation that now calls death to Iran, death to America. We want nuclear weapons. And their boss, who just died in a helicopter crash, was the murderer of tens of thousands of their own people. All right, man, I'll tell you what. Hit me with that last clip from Congressman Walz. Go ahead.
That now will end. You called him the butcher of Tehran. Jillian Turner reports That's from right. the State Department that Iran executed 853 people last year, many of them women and teenagers, political dissidents among them. This year, more than 200 people have been executed so far, including two women just 2 days ago, Congressman.
No, that's right. And they didn't just disappear, as awful as that is, into some state prison. Many of them were hung in the streets. Children, teenagers, to send a message to the schoolgirls that were daring to protest the regime. So this regime's brutality cannot be overstated. Yet we just had a senior administration official, Brett McGurk, secretly meeting with the regime in Oman just a few weeks ago. So the concessions appeasement approach from this administration just doesn't seem to be changing. They have to do a 180 on their Iran policy, and that would solve so much in terms of Gaza, Hezbollah, and the Houthis and the instability in the regime. Go back to maximum pressure and make the regime worry about its own survival and its own financial stability.
One practical thing they
could do. Great commentary. By the way, full credit to my sweet wife, who's the one who pointed that interview out to me. Let's take a break right now. We'll come back and we'll wrap this topic up. But yes, the Persians, the Iranians, they still want what they wanted back then. They want the free world. They want it for their own. I'm just telling you right now, folks, we got to stand in those hot gates. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just laying truth out there because it matters. So, I'm finishing up this Dipper, Butcher of Iran, and let me just tell you, there's some great tweets too, by the way, text, by the way. I'll get to those in a moment. There was a question when the chopper went down. First of all, we didn't know what had happened. All we knew was word was coming in, apparently, and to the Situation Room that the president of Iran was missing. They couldn't find his chopper for a while. Can you imagine? Is there a time when the president of the United States, people are like, where's he at? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Well, we can't find him. How do you not find him? I mean, was old boy on a lark? I mean, what was happening here? But anyway, the bottom line was they didn't know where he was. They had to go through a search and find him. Anyway, search dragged on for nearly half a day. Story here on Politico points out how dicey these things can get on the international scale. Because it says here, and I think this is probably true, for a little while, says one official, it was not a crazy question to ask, is this how World War III begins? Let that settle for a minute. The question becomes, is this how World War III begins? Flashpoints. The loss of a world leader. The loss of a world leader from an unstable, potentially nuclear nation. The loss of a world leader who just, by the way, authorized shooting ballistic missiles across Jordan and Iraq into Iran, Israel. Just what, a month ago? So it's not like they're not a nation that is filled with bad ideas and awful capabilities. They are a nation which is, generally speaking, somewhat unpredictable on the world stage. What is predictable, though, is the Biden administration doesn't know what to do. Doesn't have a clue. Can't tell their elbow from their shoe sole. Wouldn't find their own backside with both hands if they had to in the dark. It's just absolutely asinine the way we mollycoddle Iran, the way we try to go with concessions and appeasement and won't you like us? We can make you like us if we give you more money. That's where we are. That's our foreign policy. If we give you money, will you be nice? Sure we will. How much you got? And then billions come in and then they shoot rockets at us. Unreal. Israel, by the way, was immediately questioned whether or not Iran was going to try to blame Israel. That was my first thought, I'll be honest. It's not an unreasonable or unfounded wonder, all right? But Israel's denying any involvement. In fact, one Israeli official spoke to Reuters in a story I've got here from the Times of Israel and said flat out, it wasn't us. There's diplomacy speak, and then there's this flat out, just normal speak. It wasn't us. There was no official Israeli government reaction to the death of Raisi. However, it says chair of the opposition, basically one of the chairs of the opposition parties in Israel, said Israel did not expect Raisi's death would make a difference to Iran's policies in the region. They said, however, there was no doubt the president was a brutal man, and we won't shed a tear. That's where we are, world. The butcher of Iran is dead. Ding dong. The butcher of Iran is dead. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not shedding a tear over it either. The more I studied up for today's show, the more I thought the world's probably a better place without him. The question now becomes, here's the last question for you. So if you're having that water cooler conversation, or you're just, you know, taking down a cold one with some friends over the weekend, and somebody says, how about that thing? Okay, here's some insight for you. It is largely believed that the guy who just died, President Raisi of Iran, was potentially in line to be the next supreme leader to replace the very old, very decrepit Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Khamenei is 85 or 86 years old. It's believed that he's in rather poor health. He could die tonight. And what I'm saying is this. That guy, we came a hair's breadth away from that guy, the butcher of Iran, being the supreme leader with his finger on the nuclear button. We were that close. So are we glad he's gone? Yes. Now the question becomes, what happens to the replacement? Who's going to take his place? Who's going to fall into favor and suddenly be the one who replaces the aging and decrepit Ayatollah Ali Khamenei? Will it be somebody who's more moderate? Somebody who's got a revisionist style? Is it going to be somebody who's just as bad, just as evil? I don't know. It's worth watching. Real quick, Paul from Huntsville just chimed in and says, Israeli officials said they wish they had thought of it. I'm going to bet you they did think of it. Glenn from Bluntsville said Prime Minister Chamberlain had tried to appease it with Hitler. We all know how that turned out, no doubt. John from Huntsville says, Phil, since there's a country called Iran, I just wonder where this country is that called I walked. I get you. Nice. That's a dad joke, John. It's a dad joke. JT Lacey Springs says the Spartan stand, if I recall proper, allowed other armies to congregate in mass to fend off the Persians. Also, when I talk to myself, I come up with some pretty good ideas, too. Thank you, sir. Mike from Harvest says, Phil, there are thousands of Greeks at the battles. Don't confuse the movie with reality. Actually, no. My history says just the opposite. There weren't thousands, but there were certainly more than 300. It was Athenians and mostly Spartans, and they were rather small in nature. But either if there were thousands, man, they were way outnumbered. And then Badger from Athens says, while in the Middle East, Saudis call it the Arabian Gulf, and will let you know they are not Persians. Yes, indeed, it is true. Do not, and by the way, do not confuse the issue, because they will square you up in a heartbeat. All right, we're going to come right back and go into the last half hour, get you guys all the way to go home time on a Taco Tuesday. I'm going to switch to my third dipper of the day. It's amazing. I'm going to get three dippers in, and yet I feel like I have run the gamut on each one of them. Big City Blues. What's going on in the big cities in America? Are we losing our big cities? Some of them. I'll tell you about it when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.